This is Kate Moorhead Carroll in the podcast Find It. Today we're going to be talking about one of the hot topics of immigration in this country, but actually coming up with a potential solution and a way forward. I have two experts with me today. One, John Caulfield, is a retired Foreign Service officer who represented the United States in 9 countries on 4 continents over a career of 40 years. John specialized in the geographic region of Latin America and the consular function, which involves services to Americans abroad and issuing visas to foreign citizens who want to visit or immigrate to the United States. He supervised the largest immigrant processing offices abroad at the American Consulate General in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, and the U.S. Embassy in Manila, Philippines. He also served as the Department of State's liaison with the U.S. Congress on immigration and citizenship issues. He ended his career as chief of the U.S. mission in Havana, Cuba. And Rebecca Black is an immigration attorney. She has an MBA and also attended law school, where she began working with David Fletcher, an attorney with over 35 years experience in the practice of immigration law. Because of her MBA and her business experience, she started working on business immigration cases and has since represented clients on family as well as business issues in front of the immigration catastrophes. She's prepared asylum cases, represented clients in deportation court, and she's filed mandamus cases with the Middle District. She's also filed successful briefs with the AAO and the Board of Immigration Appeals. She's fluent in Spanish and in French. So this is the conversation in which we propose a potential solution to one of the great problems with immigration. So to begin, I want to ask you, John and Rebecca, to tell us, if you can briefly, what is happening in this country that has caused a crisis? In other words, what is the problem?
Immigration is a complicated issue, and it has been marked by opinions on both extremes. People who are uncomfortable with immigration, who believe that we just have to get rid of these people. They don't speak English, they don't belong here, they're criminals, and we're afraid of them. On the other hand, you have people who advocate, say, well, there's a human right to go wherever you want, and we shouldn't set up any barriers. If people want to come here, that's fine. And literally, we have people taking these two positions. I believe that there is an option, which I call the 70% option, that most people, most Americans, could agree on, which accommodates a certain number of immigrants, allowing them to meet employment needs in our country and to join members of their family who are already here. At the same time that we can exclude people through a vetting process that are criminals or that cannot support themselves or for whatever other reason do not meet the criteria for immigration. And so much of my career, I headed the centers that process legal immigrants to the United States. In Ciudad Juarez, Mexico, where all Mexican immigrants come to the United States, in Manila in the Philippines, which is the largest source of immigrants in Asia, and even in London, which is the largest immigrant visa-issuing post in Europe. So I'm very familiar with why people come to the United States. And you know, it's the same reason people have always come here. They come for economic opportunity, and they come for the opportunity to be who they are without worrying that they have the wrong religion or the wrong language or they're in the wrong ethnic group. They can come to a country where people accept them on their individual merits. And that's been our history for really our entire history of the United States. And if you look around in our society, we have a president who's the daughter of an immigrant, is the son of an immigrant mother. His opponent in the last election was the daughter of 2 immigrant parents. We have a Secretary of State from Florida, Marco Rubio, who is the son of 2 immigrant parents. And 2 of the Secretary of States that I worked for in my career in the State Department were immigrants themselves, Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright. And I could go on for the next hour naming elected officials, leaders in the arts and sciences that are immigrants themselves or the children of immigrants. So we have a unique ability in the United States to integrate people into our country, to inculcate them with the values of our country, and to become productive members of our society. And these are the people I believe we should find a way to accommodate. Now, in discussions with Rebecca and Kate, we have come up with some ideas of what a consensus would be, and that's written down on your paper, and we will ask you to talk about these. But I'd like perhaps Rebecca to talk a little bit about the difficulties in immigrating to the United States legally and why we have so many undocumented people here.
The sheet on your paper right now is created by Pat Ellis, and it is simply terms. Huh? Oh, Rebecca created it. But it's the terms and definitions so that you all can speak and understand the basic terms regarding immigration. Because first of all, if we're going to do anything, we need to know the terms, and a lot of people don't understand them correctly. The solution, where Marissa is going to help us pass out in just a minute, but I wanted you to hear these two before we pass out the solution to discuss.
Before I became an immigration attorney, I spent 15 years in the food and beverage industry and 5 years doing outside sales for Light Industrial Temporary Help. I had a lot of employees who were not from the U.S. You know, they brought me documentation. I was not a fraud expert. I couldn't tell you whether they were legitimate documents or not. But in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot of kind of wink, wink, nod, nod about the whole thing. And then after 9/11, suddenly everybody became hyper-focused on legality. So most people who come to the U.S. undocumented would really rather come legitimately. But If I'm poor in Honduras or poor in the Philippines or poor in Africa, and I go to the local consulate to apply for a visa, my first problem is there's no visa that I can apply for that fits my need, which is I want to come to the U.S., work, get ahead, maybe send money back home, and because it'll get denied. My alphabet soup of visas that I can apply for, well, tourist visa, I don't have the money to come to the U.S., go to Disneyland or visit, you know, the Grand Canyon and then come back home. I don't qualify for an artist visa or a sports visa or any of the visas. There's no visa that just simply says, you can come here, get a job, and as long as you're paying into the system, paying taxes, keeping your nose clean, and you're gainfully employed, you can stay. There's none. So the reality is most people, they do what they have done for centuries. They vote with their feet. They go where the opportunity is. And for the past 200 years, the opportunity has been here. So they come here and they, you know, they're gainfully employed. They're roofing our houses. They're attending elderly in a home. They're on farms or dairy farms, taking care of all these needs in our society. That it's not just that people don't want to work; it's that we don't really have the people to work. You know, most Americans have not done a great job of replacing ourselves over the past 40 years or something like that. And so, when you don't, but you need people to drive an economy. You don't have people, the economy eventually will wither. And yes, maybe we can tech our way out of it or mechanicize it, but there's still a lot of stuff that just needs to be done by humans. And so we have the need, and people respond to it. Now, with this administration, what we're seeing is a tremendous crackdown on enforcement. I know the administration likes to talk about criminals. The fact that you've entered the country, you know, through the border illegally or overstayed your visa, those are civil violations. I haven't done anything to hurt somebody. I haven't robbed you. I haven't, you know, held you up, I haven't raped you, I haven't done anything. All I've done is crossed the border or gotten here somehow and sort of slipped into the wide group of people who are here without paperwork.
Just to compliment one thing that Rebecca said, that we do have a program in the United States that allows workers to immigrate to the United States. But since 1977, it is exclusively for professional workers. If you are a roofer, if you are harvesting crops, if you're working on a dairy farm, if you're emptying bedpans in a nursing home, we don't have a visa for you. And yet, these are the types of jobs that our economy is generating. We have become a service-oriented economy in the hospitality industry, in the healthcare industry. And if you look around, you will see a large percentage of the workers in these industries are immigrants. Some are here legally because they may have married an American or have some other basis to qualify, and others walked across the border or overstayed a visa. And in the desperation that people have to hire workers, they've hired anyone who walks through the door.
So as you can see, Rebecca and John have just very clearly pointed out to us the problem. It is impossible to come to this country legally to work if you are in a manual labor type job. It is impossible. They make it seem like there might be a visa out there. You said an alphabet soup. I love that. Alphabet soup of visas. It is not possible to come here legally to do the jobs that we actually have a lot of need for in this country. So you've outlined the problem well. Now, tell us a little bit about how you would solve this problem.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think we all agree that the process we saw at the border over the last couple of years, where millions of people a year came across, wasn't working for our country. Now, as Kate and I were saying, that since there are no other options to come to the United States, one of the few remaining things was something called political asylum. And we had 50,000 a year people requesting political asylum over our recent history. But since that was one of the only ways you could get to the United States, the word got out, come up to the border and ask for political asylum. And of course, with millions of cases, the courts got backlogged and we weren't able to sort these out on a timely basis. So the one thing that I would say is we have had for many years a process of sorting out refugees and political asylees to come to the United States. We took about 100,000 refugees a year and 50,000 a year. They were processed away from the border. They were certified as refugees by the UN. They were vetted by voluntary organizations. And a certain percentage of those got to immigrate to the United States or elsewhere based on how much they had suffered, what background they had, which would make it easier for them to live in the United States, whether they had job skills, whether they spoke any English, whether they had relatives here. And then there was another 50,000 or so who were in the U.S. They were students, or they were, you know, on a long-term stay of some type, and something went wrong back in their home countries. There was a revolution, or there was some repression. And these people, if they applied and met the criteria that they would be victimized if they returned, were allowed to stay. There were other things have developed over the years, but mainly to accommodate the fact that we had millions of workers in our economy who were not able to document themselves through normal immigration law. And people explored other alternatives, whether it was political asylum or new categories like temporary protected status that just, instead of being temporary, turned into essentially permanent. Because there was no legal visa that people could obtain. And one last number I'll give you. The estimates of how many undocumented people there are, or let's say precariously documented people whose documentation could be removed by an executive decision, is in the neighborhood of 5 to 6% of the population of the United States. 5 to 6 billion. That's a lot of people. We have 325 million or so people in the United States. In a city like Jacksonville, that means there are at least 50 to 60,000 people here who are undocumented or precariously documented, who are living in our community and, for all intents and purposes, look like they're totally integrated. There's also no disagreement, I think, that anyone who commits a crime, who is an immigrant, a serious crime, after they go through the judicial process, and if they are convicted, they should leave. I mean, most people don't disagree with that, but we have a process to determine if someone is guilty of crime. It's not just pointing a finger at a group of Hispanics and saying they belong to a gang. I used to have a boss of mine, Roger Noriega, who was the assistant secretary for Latin America, who immigrated with his family from Cuba after the revolution. They ended up in Kansas City. Roger used to tell the story to us that when he was a kid going to school in Kansas City, when they came home from the school, he and his brother would walk on opposite sides of the street. Why? Because in Kansas City, the police saw two Hispanics walking together. They were a gang. So we have to use the constitutional process we have to sort out who is a criminal and not just wave our finger and point to people and say, they're all criminals.
So if you want a solution, I've always thought that if you really wanted a solution, that you do create a visa. You create a process where the average guy, you know, somebody sitting on a farm in Mexico or Guatemala, and, you know, they see their crops failing every year because of global warming. Okay, so they go to the embassy. They spend several months earning to pay the embassy fee, because to get that appointment, you're paying about $150. So, but they can go and get a visa that would say, you can come to the U.S. and work, and as long as you keep your nose clean, you can stay. You can renew your visa. So you come here. Most people who come to the U.S., they already have a network of family, friends, or people from the village back home that they kind of hook up with, who show them how to get a job, what to do. So then have a simple process that you now show proof of employment to the government, so the government is happy, and every year you renew it, showing you're still employed. Maybe you've changed employers. And one of our temporary work visas right now, they're always geared to one employer. And sometimes, unfortunately, there's abuses in the system, abuses by employers who have these employees under their thumb, so to speak. So you can change employers if you don't like it. Every year you file taxes. Every year you'd show responsibility. And if you do anything stupid, if you break the law criminally, then you would simply be removed, and none of these lengthy deportation proceedings. I think if you did something like that, that would create that would solve the problems of people coming here undocumented because they're desperate. And like John just said, there's been a lot of abuse in the political asylum, because that's what people would do. They'd come to the U.S. and they'd file for asylum, when really their asylum issue is economic. And so it's, you could solve it if you wanted to. I lobbied on Capitol Hill for, I don't know, 6 years in a row, and then got frustrated because every time you talk to a senator or a congressman, they'd look at you and go, oh, you can't do immigration. Nobody wants to do immigration. It's a political hot potato. It's just not going to fly. And sometimes what we were proposing were tweaks to existing visa issues that would solve some problems, and that was the same response we always got. So the answer is, currently, I don't think Congress cares to do anything about it, because it's gives everybody an opportunity to say, you know, let's pick up the usual suspects.
So what you're proposing, Rebecca, is that someone, not before they come to the country, in their own country, they could go to their embassy and they could go to our embassy in their country, and apply for a visa and show proof of employment or the desire to be employed. And then they would have to check in with the government and show that they're employed gainfully and haven't convicted a crime and that they pay taxes. And it would be year to year. and one strike, you're out, right? You commit a crime, you go back. Okay, we're going to distribute, Marissa and Pat, do you want to help? We're going to distribute these pieces of paper that basically describe this solution that Rebecca and John have come up with. And John, do you want to add something?
There's sort of two issues. One, Rebecca just mentioned, what do we do about gaps in the economy where we need workers? And that's what she described as a solution for that. There's another issue, though. What do we do about the people who are already here? They're working in jobs, but they have no documentation. And so one of the solutions for this that I'd like you to think about, is there a process whereby we should allow people to sponsor those who are already here and good standing members of our community? Could it be an employer? Could it be a church attesting to the character of someone who's living here? Could it be a social organization or even a teacher? And after we attest to the character, are they self-supporting? Can they support themselves? Do they have a job? And the third thing, do they meet all the other criteria, such as do they have criminal convictions? Are they in good health, et cetera, et cetera? So basically it's saying, can we create a system that allows people here who otherwise are upstanding members of the community to normalize their status by applying for a visa and becoming lawful permanent residents? That's a green card. That allows them to remain and live in the United States and have most of the privileges we do. Of course, they can't vote, don't serve on juries, that type of thing. But it also gives them an opportunity in the future, if they meet certain criteria, to apply to become U.S. citizens. So that's what we're considering. And then, as Rebecca said, what if you're an employer who can't get someone to work in the United States? You have a slaughterhouse, a meat processing plant, a dairy farm. Very few Americans will take some of these jobs. And so we believe, an opportunity for a way to apply to work in those areas.
Thank you for joining me in this very important subject. The proposal itself, the solution and the problem, as well as the terms, can be found on the Jacksonville Cathedral website at jackscathedral.org. May God bless you.